couch potatoes across the country, around the world, on the radio and on the internet. I'm Kevin Carr, and you're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies. On today's show, I'm going to be talking about Life of the Party and breaking in Happy Mother's Day with two Mother's Day movies. I guess they're marginally Mother's movies. The mother's the main character. They're not your standard, you know, movie that you'd expect to watch with mom. And I'm also going to look back at Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure. There's a Steelbook coming out. There's also a little bit of Bill and Ted news in the news. And speaking of news, I'll be talking about a couple other pieces of news and the trailer park and the home cinema roundup later featuring the odious 50 Shades Free. But first, if you want to get in touch with me, you can email me at fatguys@fatguysatthemovies.com. You can leave me a voicemail at 740-205-6456. That's 740-205-6456. You can find me on the internet at fatguysatthemovies.com or facebook.com/fatguysatthemovies. And you can reach out to me on Twitter at twitter.com/KevinCarr.
Good evening. I'm Ron Burgundy, and this is what's happening in your world tonight.
This week's news, the big one, I mentioned this, teased it a little bit earlier, Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure was a movie that came out in the late 80s. I absolutely loved this movie. And they did a sequel called Bill and Ted's Bogus Journey a couple years later. It was still a fun movie, not as well-received and not as well-remembered. And they've been talking about doing a Bill and Ted 3 literally for decades. Like I said, the first Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure came out 30 years ago. And now we have just gotten word this week, thanks to Alex Winter, who played Bill, that they're going to be doing Bill and Ted 3, which is going to be called Bill and Ted Face the Music. Now, of course, Alex Winter and Keanu Reeves are much older now than they were when they made the first Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure. This is one of those fan movies. It's sort of like when they were trying to do a Ghostbusters 3 for so many years. This follows very much the same path, where the original movie is beloved and was kind of a surprise hit and became a cultural phenomenon. And then they did a sequel, which I think people remember as being better than it was. I actually really liked Bill and Ted's Bogus Journey back in the, I think it was early 90s it came out. But having gone back and watched it, I do realize it doesn't hold up as well, even though it was a lot of fun. But that sort of absurd storytelling was so fresh and different in the first movie, and you couldn't just recreate that lightning in a bottle in the second one. And now with Bill and Ted 3, I don't know, are they too old? Because if they had ever gotten Ghostbusters 3 off the ground and didn't try to reboot it with the female Ghostbusters, Ghostbusters 3 would have been depressing. I think it probably would have been. It's sort of like watching some of these rebooted sitcoms. I've not watched a lot of them. I like watch an episode or two of Roseanne just to be able to talk about it. But to me, coming back and rebooting something with like the original cast who's like old and they're gray and they're, you know, it does kind of reek of desperation and sadness. I mean, I think it works fine with something like Will and Grace. I haven't watched the Murphy Brown reboot, but I just have a feeling that watching Candace Bergen at that age might not be as fresh as watching her when she was in the 80s and 90s. And call me crazy. So, I don't know, maybe it's going to be good. It's got some good writers behind it, and apparently the story is that once again they have to do time travel to save the day. But, you know, like, George Carlin's not just dead, but he's been dead for a while. And Alex Winter doesn't look... He looks a lot older now. And Keanu Reeves still looks good for his age. I mean, the guy's in his 50s. But, I mean, he certainly is not Ted Theodore Logan from the original film. So I think this is fraught with disaster. Whenever you reboot or try and put in a sequel that far down the road, unless you're like rebooting it like the Jurassic World movie where you just get a whole new cast and maybe bring in one of the original actors. But in a way, it kind of reminds me of when they did the Independence Day sequel. You know, you had some new people and none of the new people worked. And then the original cast is kind of sad and pathetic seeing them that old in the movie. Another one that's a movie that's being resurrected from the fires of whatever is Bad Boys for Life, which is the third Bad Boys movie. It's finally getting a January 2020 release date. The best thing you can say about this movie is Michael Bay's not directing it. I don't know if this one's going to work. I mean, yeah, sure, there's still fans out there for Will Smith, and I guess Martin Lawrence, but I don't know. This it's a January release date. I mean, these were summer, big summer movies. And I know that nowadays big movies are moving outside of that frame. But yeah, that still doesn't bode well for this. It still might be a little bit too much of a has-been, and throwing it into a January release is really iffy. Unless it comes right in the beginning of January, or it's like Valentine's Day. That's still kind of a dumper toilet weekend set for movies. And the final piece of news is, unfortunately, Terry Gilliam had a health issue. Some people were reporting it as a stroke, but apparently he's saying that he's back into the level where he can travel. But this puts The Man Who Killed Don Quixote's distribution in jeopardy, and it has lost its American distributor. And as anything with a Terry Gilliam movie, it's always a battle to get it out there. And eventually we're going to see this movie, but I think they're still having struggles getting it through the can window. You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the trailer park. The first one I want to hit is The Predator, which opens on September 14th.
Tell me about the mission. Did you see anything unusual?
Like an alien, you mean?
And your men? Someone or something tore them to pieces.
I think they're attempting hybridization. They're upgrading on every planet they visit.
We need to know if you pose a threat.
This is directed by Shane Black, who was actually in the original Predator. He played one of the characters in there. And I like Shane Black. I think he's done some good stuff. I think he's underrated. The Nice Guys was a hilarious movie, and I really liked Iron Man 3. So I'm kind of looking forward to this because I at least have some faith in him that he's not going to just muck it up the way they did when they did that movie Predators. But we'll see. I mean, September, I don't know. I'm okay with a September release for a Predator movie because I think that's when a lot of the Predator movies have fallen, like either Alien vs. Predator or when Predators came out. That was either August or September. So that's kind of a rough time for movies, but I think that works traditionally for this series. The next movie in the trailer park is Robin Hood, which has a big Thanksgiving release on November 21st.
There's been whispers.
He's got our commoners looking up, seeing hope.
He's under the hood.
He's obviously well trained.
You flatter him. He's a smash and grabber, nothing more.
Who do you think the thief is?
He's all of us.
They've got the kid who was in Kingsman playing Robin Hood. And he's good. I mean, I think he's a good leading man. They've got Jamie Dornan playing Will Scarlet, so maybe if when he's not trying to do an American accent, he'll be a better actor. My biggest issue with this is watching the trailer, this feels a lot like King Arthur. If you remember that movie that Guy Ritchie directed, I think it was last year. Nobody remembers it. With Charlie Hunnam was King Arthur. It was overly produced. It had too much just CGI special effects. And that's the danger in getting these big, vast movies. Like, they did that with, like, Pompeii and The Legend of Hercules. Both of those were terrible films, but they weren't helped by the fact that it was so CGI. Just, oh, look at how we're showing Rome in its heyday, Middle Ages in its heyday. It's going to look a lot like King Arthur, where it's going to look overproduced and not very good. Also, I get a real feel of that movie, The Musketeer, that incomprehensible Peter Hyams movie where they had Wu Ping doing the choreography for The Musketeer about 20 years ago. That movie was awful. And this movie looks a lot like that because he's flipping around and doing parkour. And just make a decent Robin Hood movie, man. What's wrong with just making a good old-fashioned Robin? We have tried this a dozen times, and they just get it wrong. I mean, the Kevin Costner movie was okay if you just could get past Kevin Costner. But yeah, it's been decades since they've actually put together a competent Robin Hood movie. Anyways, we'll see when that comes out in November. That is it for this segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking a little bit about movie etiquette because there's a couple things that have hit the news and also just personal life on the way back. Because we can! Uh-oh. 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 Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Before we jump into the movie reviews, I want to address a couple things because it's summertime. We're getting the big movies. You know, next week's Deadpool 2, then we got Solo, A Star Wars Story. This is a good time to sort of like take account of what's going on in the theaters. And, you know, we had Avengers, which is a huge movie, but let's start talking about this because people are going to be spending more time in the theaters. And I like to talk about this every now and then. I've gone on record on a lot of this before. There's a couple things that have been bothering me, and it's just sort of the way society evolves and what's becoming of certain things. In particular, some things going on online. And online is a garbage world. It's the Wild West of awfulness, and you can find the worst of everything on Twitter. Twitter is just, it's a garbage trough of nonsense out there. But I saw this article, and I can't remember whether I saw it first on Facebook or Twitter, and I think it was shared by somebody I used to do work with in the online writing community. And it was this Mashable article, and it was about the spoilers for Avengers Infinity War. And they basically said, when is too soon to publicly share spoilers on a big movie? And my first reaction was, always. Always is too soon. And here's the insidious part with the online writing community, especially film. I'm reticent to call them journalistic areas because there's not a whole lot of journalism that goes on in some of these film writing things. I was looking at one site today and it just had a list of, I'd say three or four of the stories on like the top page was this person wants to play this kind of character. You know, it was like Monica Baroque, and is that her name? She's in Deadpool, and she played in like Firefly, and she was in the V TV show. And apparently she did interviews, and they basically asked her, what would you like to play? And like, she'd like to play the first female James Bond. And I'm like, is this even existing in a universe that can happen? I mean, is anyone even thinking of that? And why would they pick her anyways? She's marginally a somewhat recognizable name. I can't tell you how many times I've seen articles about, oh, so-and-so wants to play a Marvel superhero. Well, everyone wants to play a Marvel. I want to play a Marvel superhero. I'd love to get a piece of that pie. There's very little journalism because there's really only so many news stories. You hear this show every week. I can cover maybe three at tops big news stories, and the rest of it's just garbage. But they got to fill their content. They got to have stuff on their feed because God forbid they don't get those clicks, and it gets more and more clickbaity. And I go to these websites and they got like garbage ads, and no wonder people have ad blockers and they complain about ad blockers. But I say, you put such crap on there and you allow such garbage on there in your ads and it just clogs up your server. Yes, I'm going to put an ad blocker on because I don't like all the garbage advertising. But ultimately, Mashable had this question about when's too soon. No, you don't publicly talk about them. Fine. You want to talk about it? Put up a post and say, warning spoilers in the headline. And then down farther in the article, do the spoilers. But give fair warning and don't put them in the title or the headline. They want to do that. The editors want to do that because, oh, clickbait. People are going to want to click that. Oh, they're going to share it and they're going to be mad. No, don't ever. It's not polite. And don't give me this garbage of, oh, well, the movie's been out for 2 weeks. Just don't be a jerk. You know what? Here's the thing. And I've said this before. Spoilers for movies are like a fart in an elevator or at the dinner table. If I do it, I don't care. Everyone likes the smell of their own brand, but it's rude to do to everybody else. And so the next time somebody breaks wind in an enclosed space, tell me if they go, oh, well, I don't mind. That is not an excuse to do it. Or so I have a friend who actually doesn't have a sense of smell. Well, he doesn't just walk around never showering and breaking wind everywhere he goes. Well, he's a pastor. I think that would cause problems with his job. But he doesn't go around doing that and saying, well, I don't have a sense of smell. It doesn't bother me. Well, it bothers everyone else. And it may not bother you for spoilers, but other people, it's a big deal. So what? It's been out for 2 weeks. Who says you have to see a movie open? And especially something like Avengers, which is, I mean, it's packed. Why can't you just be allowed to wait a couple weeks? Why is it so important for people to spoil it for other people? Like, okay, I guess when the next Avengers movie comes out next summer, there's going to be discussions of what's coming up and you're going to have the trailers. Okay, so when that starts marketing, fine. I mean, I do think there is a time limit And there are certain things that become culturally significant. Rosebud is a sled. Darth Vader is Luke's father. These things are so ingrained into our culture now. But still, there's a lot of movies. And I had somebody say, well, the movie's been out for years. Who cares? Maybe you haven't discovered. There's a lot of movies that people don't see in the initial release. Spoilers are never okay. And if you do have to talk about them and they're irrelevant, then at least give a warning and a real fair warning. Don't be like, oh, spoiler alert, Darth Vader's Luke's dad. Huh, the movie's been around. No, it's unacceptable. Always. You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Another piece of garbage behavior that I want to address, and I've talked about this before, and this happened during my Life of the Party screening in Columbus, Ohio. Phones. My God, what sort of arrogant idiots can't unplug for 2 hours to watch a freaking movie? And a lot of people are going to be like, oh yeah, millennials, they're the worst. It's not just millennials, people. I honestly have been to more movies that have been disrupted by like full-grown adults. I've had old women on the phone farting around during a movie, and I've asked them to stop. And I had this one woman playing on her phone the whole time, and I say, do you mind turning that off? And she looks at me and she goes, no. So I turned on my flashlight and I shined it in her face and just kept it there. Oh, she was mad at me. And I'm like, great, go get the usher and complain about it. I will aggressively go after you if you've got a phone. But so this woman in the front row of the screening, constantly popping her phone out, looking at texts, sending texts, going back and forth, the full brightness, the miniature sun in the beginning of the thing. And I yell out, I go, hey, put the phone away, guy. I didn't know it was a woman. She then turned the brightness down, but she kept using it. I mean, like for a half hour. And I walk down to her and I'm like, hey, are you planning on texting this whole time? And she starts swearing at me and taking this huge attitude. Well, I'm on call and I have to take these. And I'm like, I'm working too. This is my job. And I'm the rude one for telling her to turn off her phone. I'm just trying to spend some time with my family. Look, if you're on call, first of all, don't go to a freaking movie. For crying out loud. Or just wait till it comes to video. This arrogant behavior that, oh, I can just do this because I'm entitled to. Look, if you have to use your phone, sit way in the back, go to a movie that's not full. I admit there have been times where I've kind of sat in the back of a movie, rows behind anybody else, and I'll pull up my phone and fart around on it. But I also know that there's nobody I'm disturbing with it. The biggest problem when it comes to phones in a movie aren't just the idiots using the phone. The arrogant, entitled, self-absorbed, I'm more important than everybody else, idiots using the phones, but the people around them that allow it to happen. Stand up for yourself. If more people told people to put their doggone phone away, you wouldn't have so many people using the phone. I've thought, oh, well, I didn't want to say anything. I didn't want to be in a confrontation. Get in a confrontation. Unplug for 2 hours, for crying out loud, people. If somebody's going to spoil it, jump down their throat and say, no, spoilers are never acceptable. And somebody's using the phone in the movie, jump down their throat and say, no, it's not acceptable to use a phone. Stand up for the rules of the theater. No wonder people are fleeing the theater. No wonder people are staying at home. Anyways, that's enough ranting from me. Next segment, I'm going to be talking about Life of the Party and breaking in on Fat Guys at the Movies. Go crazy. Punch a higher floor. Two Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's jump into the movie reviews finally. The first one I want to talk about is Life of the Party. After she drops her daughter off for her senior year at college, a woman is hit with a divorce from her husband, so she heads back to school to finish the last year of her own degree.
I don't regret staying at home and being your mom, but I regret not getting my degree.
That's why somebody's mom just enrolled in college. I'm referring to myself.
I'll see you around the quad.
Nobody says that, Mom.
Well, bring it back.
I love your mom.
You had sex in a library? Frank!
No, don't tell Frank.
Deanna just had sex in a public place.
Where?
In the stacks.
In her slacks?
Okay, first of all, I want to go on record to say I really like Melissa McCarthy. I think she is an immensely talented individual. I think she is a beautiful woman. I think she can do comedy, but she's got some serious dramatic chops. I'm not a fan of her career, mainly because she came on so strong with Bridesmaids, and I think it's wonderful that she got that much attention. But then for like 5 years after Bridesmaids, it was just nonstop retread of that character. The foul-mouthed, obnoxious, crazy, unhinged, obese woman. And you saw that in Identity Thief. You saw that in The Heat. You saw that in Tammy. It's been done to death. And she's done some great stuff. Otherwise, she was in St. Vincent. She was quite good. And that's one of the reasons why I kind of like the movie Spy. Because she was different than just that character. She did something different. She stretched. This movie is a diversion from what she's done in the past. She's sort of a goofy woman, and she's kind of cute and adorkable is sort of that term. The problem is that this movie, and I realize I zeroed in on it, this is directed by her husband, Ben Falcone, who co-wrote this with her. And he's best known for directing other Melissa McCarthy movies. You gotta pump the brakes and worry about when somebody's entire career is hinged upon the association with like one person. So if all your movies are just this one thing, or it's with this one actor, then you're probably getting it not because you're the best for the job. And I realize in watching this movie, it's not that I dislike Melissa McCarthy. I just dislike Ben Falcone's movies. He did Tammy, which was awful. That one with Susan Sarandon a couple years ago, where she was this obnoxious woman again, traveling with her mom. And then he also directed The Boss, where she was sort of taking over the Girl Scout cookies. He's just not a good director. There's very little cohesiveness in his films. The movies, in particular, you see this with Life of the Party, it's just this hodgepodge of gags. And some of them, it just seems like they wrote a bunch of these and just kind of crammed them together and they don't relate to each other. So it results in these weird gotcha moments or reveals throughout the movie where you're like, oh, like there's a little part in here where she's in school and she's in this archaeology class and she has to give an oral presentation. But she's like, oh, I'm not good in front of the crowds. I'm not good. And then she kind of melts down. And I'm like, but that's never addressed anywhere else. And it's not relevant to her character or her degree. She's an archaeology major. I mean, it'd be different if it was like she was a teacher in drama or something where you have to get up in front of people and present. That makes sense. Because then her professor's like, oh, well, I can't do anything. It's part of the grade. Well, you're the professor and you're teaching archaeology students. So there's this sort of disconnected, discombobulated mess of scenes with this movie. The other thing is it really stretches the logic. And I mean, I know it's a stupid comedy, but even some logic of like, if you know anything about divorce or colleges, you're like, well, how do you get a divorce? And well, how can he sell the house? And then how is she matriculating and getting in the same year and getting the course schedule? And where did that money come from? And there's a whole bunch of stuff that makes no sense that they don't even pretend to make sense. And that's part of the problem with this movie. That's what makes this movie not work for me. Is it is just kind of all over the map. It really doesn't seem to have a logical through line. While any one scene, there's a couple good jokes in it, but then there's also old jokes. There's like jokes about Uber drivers. And that's one of my problems with like, remember that movie Blockers a couple weeks ago? Where I'm like, they're making jokes that were old 5 years ago, and they're making it into a major Hollywood movie. You know, it's one thing for somebody to put an old joke on Facebook. It's another thing to put it into a film and then expect people to laugh. But I guess my audience liked it that I was with. Every single joke seemed to land with them. I didn't think it was that good. So in spite of Melissa, I mean, she's doing that movie about the person who forges letters from writers. That movie looks good, and it looks like she's kind of playing a totally different character. I'm excited to see that because I like her. I don't know. This movie just doesn't seem to make the grade, if I want to use a school term. Anyways, that's what I have to say about that one. I think it kind of sucks.
It kind of sucks.
Wait a second. I don't like the sound of that.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about Breaking In. A woman returns to her childhood home after the death of her father, who made his money from criminal activities, only to find her family is in peril from a home invasion attack.
Check it out. Fully automated security system.
This place is a fortress.
I guess some people get paranoid in their old age.
What were you trying to hide, Dad?
You are a woman. Alone. At the mercy of strangers.
What do you want?
We want something in the house. Do exactly what I say, or you and your kids will not survive this night.
I'm just a mom. You have no clue what I'm capable of.
First of all, can I just give a little bit of love for Gabrielle Union? First, I think she's a gorgeous woman. And she's aged incredibly well. She's like in her 40s. And she looks great. She still could play like 20s. I mean, easy. She's a beautiful woman. I've always thought she was a great actress. She kind of disappeared there for a while. She had a tough time trying to find roles, I think. But she seems to be coming back in a couple things. But I think it's great that she's getting a role like this. I'd like to see her do more stuff. I like her as an actress. And this is the kind of movie we've seen this a dozen times before. You know, the kids are in danger and then the mother goes all mama bear on them. It's pretty standard. We've seen a lot of this before. In fact, I mean, almost alarmingly similar to the robbers in Death Wish a couple months ago. That one where they had the people that, they probably shouldn't have hired this guy because he's a little bit too unhinged. So they have Death Wish is sort of reminds me of that. And you know, you've seen these things where they've got a gang who's like, we're here to break in a house, but you know, we're not good at doing this. And we've got an unhinged guy who's going to do stuff. And this person is not very loyal. They never explain why the guy has the criminal activities or anything. So there's holes in the plot, but overall, I mean, it's effective. You know, it does put you in that position of saying, what would you do? And I would get violent much faster. And my wife, you watch this movie and I'm like, I could see my wife in a situation like this protecting our kids. Do not go after my wife because she's nice and she's very sweet and she's, you know, very laid back. But if you go after her kids, the claws will come out. And woe to anybody who disparages our children because she'll be in front of me. I'd have to be holding her back. You know, I'd be like, come on, no, don't. I'd hold her back. So it is kind of a neat movie. And it's another Mother's Day movie. I mean, this is the weirdest Mother's Day on movie record because it's not like this nice little sweet, you know, movie about, oh, this is what it's like to be a mom. And, oh, like they did What to Expect When You're Expecting. I remember several years ago, that was, I think, a Mother's Day movie. These are both Life of the Party and this one are very different Mother's Day movies. Not as different as something like Psycho or The Goonies, which both of those would make great little Mother's Day movies as well. But Breaking In works. I enjoyed it. I thought it did what it needed to do, and it wasn't trying to be too much of any one thing. I mean, there's huge logic holes in it, but overall it works. And I kind of liked it better than Life of the Party, so I'm going to say it kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
That's it for this segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to have a look back at Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure, the box office, and the home cinema roundup featuring the odious 50 Shades Freed. Wonder Woman,
Wonder Woman. All the world's waiting for you.
And welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about another film. It's an old movie, and we talked a bit about the planned sequel, the third movie, in the first segment, and that is Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure. I kind of want to go back and look at this because there's a new Steelbook coming out, I think next week or sometime in the month of May. So it's sort of a retro look. You know, they got a Blu-ray release of it. They've released this on Blu-ray before, but they've got a new special release. And, of course, you've got the Bill and Ted 3 news. So this is as good of a time as any to look back on the original Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure. Two high school doofuses who aspire to be rock stars get some help in finishing their school project by a time traveler in a telephone booth.
Now, a motion picture so grand.
so magnificent, and so vast, it spans 7,000 years.
No way!
Yes way!
But it starts with Bill.
I'm Bill S. Preston!
Who is Joan of Arc?
And Ted.
Noah's wife?
We are in danger of flunking most heinously tomorrow.
They're traveling through time.
Put them in the Iron Maiden.
Excellent!
Execute them.
Bogus.
First of all, for all you millennials out there, yes, there were telephone booths. They basically disappeared once cell phones became ubiquitous. But I remember as a kid, there were actual, I remember using telephone booths occasionally. And you see them in movies like The Birds or, you know, Superman cartoons. There are so many anachronisms in this movie or stuff that doesn't exist anymore. And it really is one of those movies that essentially captures what it was like in the 80s, because it did have, well, at least growing up in the suburbs, it had that feel of a high school from the 80s. It had the style, because it wasn't trying to be 80s. It was just existing there. That's where it was. And the clothes that they wear were very 80s, but they were very trending for that moment. And I remember when I first saw this movie, I took a date. We would go out on dates and she'd pick a movie, and then I'd pick a movie on the other night. And so movies that I ended up picking were like Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure, The Serpent and the Rainbow, these kind of crazy movies. And she'd pick stuff like Moonstruck, which isn't a bad movie. But when I was in high school, I really had no interest in watching Moonstruck. And I just loved it. And my date did not. It didn't ruin the relationship, but it kind of became a lightning rod for whenever there was an argument about our tastes and how they differed. This movie is the perfect blend of weirdly credible science fiction and goofiness and silliness. The whole phone booth thing's, I think, a bit of a nod to Doctor Who. It also had George Carlin as Rufus. He's the guy who was basically, he was their Obi-Wan. He was the one helping him along the way. But the movie itself, while it has them going through an adventure, obviously with the name like Excellent Adventure, and having them have real peril and have danger, it still worked. And it was insanely absurd enough to work, but still kind of suck you in. And the characters were great. There's a couple things in there now. It's funny. You watch some of these movies from the 80s, and there's one scene in particular where it uses a term. I can't say it on the radio. But it's a term that is a slur, and it's a big slur now. It's like a get you kicked off the air kind of slur. And it's a very funny moment in the context of the 80s, but I think, for some people it might not work. There's a line in Alice's Restaurant that uses this slur as well, a version of it. And, you know, in the context, it's funny, but it's not something you can really do nowadays. But it's sort of like Blazing Saddles. Well, the Blazing Saddles was just filled with it. You know, it had these moments that you could do that back in the 70s. You can't do that now. But still, you know, once you get past all that stuff, it's a fun movie. It is enjoyable and just fun to watch and charming, and it's lightning in a bottle. So I'm going to have to say that Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure still, even now, 30 years later, totally rocks.
It rocks.
Excellent!
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk real quickly about the box office. Of course, the winner last week was Avengers: Infinity War. It was, I think, the second highest second weekend ever, behind Star Wars: The Force Awakens. And it's made $1 billion by now going into this weekend. But almost 115 million in its second weekend. So you're going to see a huge number again this weekend. The closest in second place was just under 15 million Overboard, which had more to do with Eugenio Derbez's fame than Anna Faris. But just about 15 million is actually good for this kind of movie, for the movie that they're aiming for with his marketplace. Tully underperformed mainly because I think that they didn't screen it and they kind of botched that release. So it just had over 3 million. And then Bad Samaritan didn't even make the top 10. It had less than 2. So, yeah, you get this a lot in May after a big release. You get some really slow gutter balls. The one movie that's actually doing pretty well in comparison is Black Panther, which isn't at 700 million yet. I think it's at 700 million into this weekend. This weekend, it should make 700 million, and it comes out on home cinema next week. But I think they're going to keep it in theaters along with Avengers just to hit that 700 million milestone. You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the home cinema roundup. Sadly, the only really new release that's kind of has anything to talk about is 50 Shades Freed. This is, of course, the third movie in the punishingly boring 50 Shades of Grey series, and it's the final one. The sex is still boring, and the characters are still insipid in this brutally dull climax of the overhyped and poorly written 50 Shades of Grey phenomenon.
Don't ask me.
Mrs. Grey, look out your window.
What you know is true.
I'm taking you away for the weekend.
I just can't believe this is my life, that I get to live with you.
Oh, I love your precious heart.
That meant nothing to me before you. I made a vow to love you faithfully, forsaking all others.
Did you sleep with her?
I hate that trailer. I hate that. I hate that. I hate the trend now in trailers. It's funny because I did the Bill and Ted's trailer, and you had a lot of narration back in the 80s for these trailers. And they had that one guy's trailer voice that you hear in a dozen trailers. And trailers change over the years. Now, for a lot of these movies, and this is the Grey's Anatomy effect, where they put some popular song in there, and it's awful. The woman screaming doesn't make this awful movie any better. This movie's bad. This movie's terrible. And it's the third one in the series, and there's no new ground to break. They do this one part in here, which I find is absurd, where they do, and I can't say it on the radio, but there's something that they do while they're alone, we'll say. They're telling secrets to each other. And there's a certain thing that they do tell secrets. And she's at first not wanting to do it. And then he's like, oh, come on. And then they do. And she's like, oh, this was great. And I'm like, yeah, that's not real. That's not how that works. And once they've gotten past all the sex in the first two movies, even as boring as vanilla as that sex was in those first two movies, they got nothing else to do. So they have to do some crappy kids on the run soap opera story. One of these diversion stories that you'd see on the, you know, soap operas from the 80s. And it's just, this is terrible. It's a bad movie. And the bonus features aren't even that good either. You get music videos for the awful songs that are in the trailer. There's another one, The Intimate Conversation with E.L. James and Eric Johnson, which is talking about how it's just more self-serving garbage. It's not even giving you insights into the movie. It's just, they have deleted scenes. And, you know, they have a whole bunch of behind-the-scenes stuff of the different elements of the movie. And then Jamie Dornan and Dakota Johnson, they talk about the characters. This is a terrible movie. This is a terrible DVD. And if you look at the box office numbers for it, this is a warning to producers about what happens when you get to the third movie. Thank God they didn't split this into two. Because you would have seen the same thing happen that happened with the Divergent movies. The only thing that saved these movies is because they had relatively low budgets of $50 million or less. But the first movie made $166 million, and by this one just barely cracked $100. And even internationally, this movie made maybe 60% of what the first one did. So there is a rate of attrition with terrible sequels, which is different than a franchise like James Bond or the Avengers that can continually introduce new things as opposed to telling the same stupid story three times in a row. Anyways, this movie sucks. The DVD and Blu-ray suck. And that's all I have to say about that.
It sucks.
Other releases on DVD and Blu-ray include Batman Ninja, which I would have liked to have seen, The Sinner Season 1, Return of the Swamp Thing, and Caged Fury, the famous woman's prison movie from the 80s. That is it for this week. I need to go. When I come back next week, I'm going to be talking about Deadpool 2. And until then, have a fat time at the movies.